Well, it's certainly been an exciting week in outside of the media for CyberFM. I don't know if you turn on CNN or Fox News or the United Nations podcast right in our app at cyber.fm. The world is a mess, man. What the hell's going on? We got truckers trucking. We got armies bombing.
Marching,
that might be better. Everything, every part of the world, something's going on. And
oil prices up. Stocks are down.
Oil prices are up. Stocks. Hey, crypto had a good run today, huh? Or yesterday?
No, dearie me.
That was wild. And now, later on in the episode, you're going to be bringing on this doom and gloom guy with cybersecurity and crypto.com getting robbed. And the world's a mess.
Not a doom and gloom guy. He's just, that's a huge dose of realism that some of us numpties sort of, you know, share our passwords. We write them down and put them on bits of paper, you know, in our desk or in our wallet. And he's just saying, just be careful. And that's Andrew. Andrew's coming up from DynaRisk and just works with a lot of companies and individuals all over the world and looking at the challenges around cybersecurity and making sure that he's come from I thought it was interesting. He's come from a banking background where, you know, as long as you've got a big safe and there aren't too many Bonnie and Clydes around, your money in the bank should be fairly safe. Having said that, you're always hearing about bank robberies, but now with digital assets, it becomes a bigger challenge. But that's after the break. But nice to be back on the air with you, James. And in this week's Digital Bytes, we've got an article on are NFTs crypto assets? If so, why does it matter? That actually gave some of my lawyer friends a bit of a scare because we'll come on to that in a second. We then look at sort of digital asset management and how that is integrating with blockchain technology. And then before the break, we've also touched on sort of Web3 and understanding, if you like, the internet sensation and sort of touching on the metaverse and bits and pieces like that. But what I'd like to do, I'd like to go back to that first article because it's very interesting. When you talk to some of the accountancy, consultancy practices, lawyers, and say, what's your thoughts? Are NFTs, are they a cryptocurrency? Now, some of you might think, well, why does it matter? You know, what's the point? Well, it's actually quite important if you're giving financial advice, because here in the UK, they've been fairly helpful and they've defined what they think is a cryptocurrency. And what they say is a crypto assets are cryptographically secured digital representations of value or contractual rights that use some type of DLT, distributed ledger technology, and can be transferred, stored, or traded electronically. Now, to me, that sounds pretty much what an NFT is. You know, it's got normally some sort of contractual right, it's got some sort of value, and it's stored on a blockchain. And therefore, if you're going to start giving advice to rock musicians, football teams, hockey teams, museums, art galleries, then if you're going to give them advice how they can actually digitize and monetize their intellectual property, I would have thought it would make sense to make sure that you've told your professional indemnity insurers that you, as the lawyer, the accountant, the consultant, who whatever your business you're trading under, that you indeed yourselves are insured to give advice on cryptocurrencies. So that's number one. And just this week, since the article came out, we've already had a couple of people contact say, thank you very much. We hadn't. We are now. We've actually contacted our underwriters and we've told them the only downside is they've actually increased our PI insurance because actually they didn't realize that we were doing that and we hadn't told them. But and if there was a claim, then potentially the PI insurers, the professional indemnity insurers, would say, sorry, you're not covered for that sort of risk. So it's a bit like having a car and you don't tell them that you're taking it at the weekends to race around a racetrack. Well, you're not covered for that sort of thing. If you want to do that, you can get insurance, but obviously it costs a lot more. But certainly from a UK perspective, and sorry, we're focusing just here on the UK, but it is really quite important. And that is, if you are giving advice on cryptocurrencies, the regulator here in the UK makes it very, very clear you need to be on their crypto asset register. If you're not, you're breaking the law. And that potentially could end up, you know, a little bit of time in Sing Sing. You know, I prison, wearing stripy pajamas. Or as my Australian friends know, you know, you could be walking around with a ball and chain around your left ankle. So
what's the organization by you? They're not called the SEC like they are here, right?
No, they're called the Financial Conduct Authority, the FCA.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So this is really important. And each jurisdiction, and we haven't got time to go into every single jurisdiction, but, you know, you really want to make sure if you're actually, you know, engaged in NFTs, that your, first of all, your advisor who's giving you the advice, and that's very often a lawyer, that actually that their PI insurance covers, because if it all blows up and suddenly you're finding you're selling NFTs, but for some reason you don't own the intellectual property and someone sues and claims on you as a business or an individual, well, you could go back to the lawyer potentially and say, hang on, you gave me advice. Well, if they haven't got insurance, well, then you're actually suing the individual firm and they've got no protection, which that all gets very, very messy. But more importantly, if you're trading, i.e. issuing, selling, buying non-fungible tokens, you want to be pretty certain that they're not being caught by the cryptocurrency regulations. So it's so it does matter. We concluded off the back of that. But you got any thoughts on that, James?
Well, you know, I was thinking earlier about so like an NFT is like a briefcase, and then cryptocurrency itself is the cash in the briefcase. And yeah, it would make sense that, how do you regulate, you know, you're not going to ask a tax attorney to change the oil in a car. So an NFT and a cryptocurrency can be absolute opposite ends of that spectrum. You know, I might not know how to repair a briefcase, but I know that that money is inside that briefcase and I want it.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you guys created this law that, it sounds to me, the way you explained it, you, NFTs are covered under the, you know, not financial advice exemption out of fear.
But what's interesting is, in very simplistic terms, you know, I've got a song, or I've got a, you know, I've got a, I don't know, I've got some art, and that the song rights and obligations and potential, you know, royalties that I can gain for that, or the pitch that I've got, they're not regulated. They are covered by, you know, you do need to make sure that if, you know, typically anything over, say, £10,000, just as an example, you'd need to make sure that you carry out some sort of AML and sort of know your client rules and regulations. That so there is that element. But the song itself, or the pitch itself, isn't covered. It's not a regulated asset. But if you look at the FCA regulations, if you then create a digital version of that song or that picture, then, well, it looks like it then becomes covered under the crypto. It becomes defined as a cryptocurrency. And if it is a cryptocurrency, then you really ought to be on the cryptocurrency register with the FCA. So that's just, you know, that's a view. And that's the great thing about the law. There's always two views. There's always someone who's going to argue, well, that's absolutely not the case. But if nothing else, I think it might be prudent just to make sure that you're on the right side of the law and you've taken the precaution of notifying your professional indemnity insurer, if you're a business, what you're doing, just to make sure they don't come back at some stage and, you know, have a go at you.
Well, you can never not have enough insurance, right?
Well, that's true enough. That's true enough. So the other thing that, you know, we're just seeing more and more about is this Web 3. And some people are saying almost we've got Web 4 just around the corner. But James, you've been doing this as long, if not longer than me. Do you mind sort of walking through the listeners sort of what Web 2, Web 1, 2, and 3, what they are?
You know, it's crazy, right? Because back in the days of the original web, Web 1.0, it was a newspaper on your computer screen, right? Somebody provided data, they pushed it on the screen, you read it, and then you kind of moved on in life. You're like, okay, right? And then eventually, as Web 1.0 grew, maybe we were able to create our own web pages, right? So now James Tiley had his page with, you know, James Tiley is... got a new job over here, you know, say thank you, send me an email at blah, blah, blah. There was no interaction, right? Then Web 2.0 came out, pre-social media, but Web 2.0 was the ability for a dynamic update, right? That's what, like, message forums were early Web 2.0. I was able to communicate with you without having to, say, send you an email and be like, hey, I updated my webpage, right? Now we were getting together and having conversations on it. We were interacting.
So this is a social media. So these are what, Facebook and Twitter?
Social media, I would almost call it Web 2.5. It came later, right? Remember MySpace? MySpace was 2.0.
Yeah.
When Facebook came and the actual technology originally was called Ajax, where the timeline was able to refresh in front of him. Oh, Johnny just updated his status. What does it say? That was an enhancement of Web 2.0. Knowing that we were now interacting in real time. No delays, no refreshing. That was the peak. Web 2.0 peaked in high school.
Right.
Now we talk about Web 3.0. And you could get a little controversial there, right? They focus it heavily on cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. But I would go as far as to say Web 3.0 is really the removal of the standardized internet that you and I know. You know, you got to find me over at jamestiley.com or whatever. That don't exist, by the way. My actual website, I have a website. It's tyl.ee. Is that not the coolest domain name I could possibly have gotten?
That is pretty cool, that is.
I love it, and I don't use it enough.
Where's EE? Is that Eastern Ethiopia?
I think it's Estonia.
Oh, Estonia. Of course it would be. Yeah.
I think it's Estonia. I know I pay a lot every year for it, and I don't live anywhere near there. But it's so cool. It's tyl.ee. And I throw stuff up there about what I'm doing once in a while. All my links, you know?
Yeah.
So Web3 is now, okay, there's more to... I want to say that they're saying it's more to the web than the web. Web3 has got more security, a lot of more dynamic actions, and takes you in between networks. You might say on-chain, off-chain. But for the general public, the normal people, they're applying it all to crypto and blockchain. That's really what they're saying with Web 3.0.
And does that also embrace the metaverse?
The metaverse...
Or is that 3.5?
Might be my theory of Web 3.5.
Yeah, what are you going to say that? Okay. And what was interesting is that there was a report recently from Electric Capital, and they were saying that there were, at the end of 2021, there were 18,000 people around the world working on a variety of Web3 protocols. So, and 65% of these developers had only joined last year. So there's been a big influx in the last 12 months to people spending a lot of time developing new protocols, new ways of using Web.3. So that's probably going to result over the next 6-12 months of all sorts of different applications from Web.3 to probably Web.35 and then on to Web 4, presumably.
So CyberFM itself uses Web 3.0, and it was a blast learning. But that's what happened. You know, we reward the listeners. We pay them as a reward for listening to the radio, regardless of if it's this show or one of my rock and roll shows or Ricky or Tony, everybody, you know, CyberFM. What they do is we have a thing called Payday. And when we announce Payday, the users go to our claim site. They connect their wallet using Web 3.0. And their data that has been pre-built throughout the month by the amount of time that they listened is waiting for them, and then it authorizes that claim and it sends the cryptocurrency into their wallet. There's no human interaction at all. It's all AI. And so that's that's Web 3.0 in the mainstream sense right there.
Right. So, but a lot of this, to be fair to our listeners, this is all just happening and evolving, and they've obviously seen the way they use the World Wide Web. It's got more sophisticated. We're using it more and more and more. But the reality is they don't really know what's happened behind the scenes necessarily. All they know is the outcome is that now they can actually look something up. They can communicate with people across the globe, either on a one-to-one basis or on a multi basis. And I know we'll get into this with Andrew, with Dynarisk, after the break, where, you know, he's cautioning, you don't really want to go into a chat forum and say, hey, my cryptocurrencies, you know, I've now got 100,000 or 500,000 or a couple of million because it's done really well. I hadn't realized Bitcoin had gone up so much, or Dodgy Coin or Sheep or whatever it may well be, because that's tantamount to, you know, going out and putting a big sign over your head saying, I've just won the lottery, you know, come and have a chat with me, and, you know, maybe come and mug me, sort of thing. So people got to be careful. Yeah, because the technology is moving ahead and you're exposed in ways perhaps you weren't necessarily aware beforehand, because people are monitoring and looking at what you're doing. When it was one-to-one with just the initial look up and read, as you say, like an online newspaper, it was quite passive. But as we go to Web 2, 3, and now potentially into Web 4, it's another level of sophistication, and we're going to see a lot more artificial intelligence, a bit like you're already saying you're using with Cyber.fm, to manipulate, monitor, and potentially exploit that data if it's in the wrong hands, I would say.
I have a Web 4.0 would be like, and I think cybersecurity is very important. People used to put on Facebook, I'm going on vacation next week for 8 days. I'm so excited. I can't wait. So what you did was you announced to the world that you're leaving your house alone for 8 days, right? And it's true, people get robbed. So imagine Web 4.0, Facebook saying, are you sure you want to post this? Here's a quick knowledge base of all the reasons why you might not want to use the word vacation. That would be a pretty cool Web 4.0 feature, I would think. I'm just, you know, spitballing while we're on the air.
My dear boy, what is spitballing?
Spitballing. I'm just making stuff up as I go along.
Oh, you do that all the time, James. I taught you that.
That's right. You taught me. The best way to do it is just doing it.
Okay, James. Right, well, but we ought to sort of head on. We've got, as I say, after the break, we've got Dynarisk coming up. The other items which we briefly mentioned there, they're all in this week's Digital Bytes. And this is obviously a weekly publication, which our regular listeners will be well aware of. But if you're new to the show, welcome. Once a week, James and I look at a selection of different things that are going on in the blockchain and digital asset sector. And then we bring on a guest and they talk about something a little bit more specific. And this week, we've got Dynarisk talking about some of the challenges around cybersecurity and keeping your digital assets well protected. So we'll see after the break. But if anyone would like a copy of Digital Bytes once a week, then contact James Tiley at cyber.fm. He's all over the web and he's certainly on LinkedIn. Or myself, Johnny Fry, JONNYFRY. I run a company called Team Blockchain here in the UK. And again, just look us up on the LinkedIn and say you'd like a copy of Digital Bytes and we'll make sure you're on the list to receive it every Wednesday. So James, after the break, we'll be back with our guest this week.
Yeah, he's the harvester of truth is what it is.
Harvester of truth. Not the Grim Reaper.
I'm making up words. Did I own that?
Yeah, I think you could. Yeah. Watch out, Bill Shakespeare. Here comes TTL.EE.
TYL.EE.
TYL.EE.
We better end this show, Johnny.
This is real-time music playing, cryptocurrency paying, free money radio, cyber.fm.
Hey, everybody, as promised, we're back. It's me and Johnny Fry. Or is it Johnny Fry and I? I don't know how I like the sound of that. I like me and Johnny Fry. Johnny, with all
James,
the bad
like
stuff.
The look, hang on, let's get this right.
Okay, correct me again.
It's James and I. It's not me. You don't put yourself first. We go up to the door, you open the door for me. Or I open the door for you.
I'm not all that politically correct. You know what I mean?
Me and Dad. For goodness sake.
Me and Dad. Can I call you Dad?
It's an example of how the Americans have ruined the English language. You know, Shakespeare be turning in his grave.
We wrecked it. R-E-K-T, wrecked it.
There's no T in it either.
There's no T in wrecked it. There's no I in team.
That's true. Oh, well. Sorry, I interrupted you.
With all the bad news going on and me bastardizing the English language.
What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? You bring a guest on that talks about all the crap that goes on in the crypto world with ransomware and theft and hacking. Oh, what the hell's going on? Between that and everything going on with the United Nations, quick shout out to everybody over at the UN. You're going to like this one. Don't worry. All is well. Johnny, why don't you bring Andrew on from DynaRisk?
Yeah, well, I'm really pleased because it's obviously someone's up there keeping an eye on us because the timing is impeccable because we've got Andrew from DynaRisk who is talking about the growing importance of protecting our data and digital assets as our lives become ever more digitized. So I know we're going to be talking about cyber on Cyber FM, and I know you're the only radio station, or certainly you were selected by the UN. So that if you're sitting in the UN, listen to us, you can do so simply because you're an official sort of partner or download for the UN. So, which is pretty impressive, James. But we don't talk about that.
We don't talk about that often, right? That we were the UN approached us. You know, we weren't out looking for that because, to be honest, I didn't want to like rattle any cages. But they came to us and they were like, you know, this is what we want. We want you. And I was like, well, I suppose I'm not going to say no.
Well, it must have a bunch of rockers there in New York that love listening to you.
I attended that meeting in a Van Halen shirt. That is a true story. It's on the internet. I met with the director of the United Nations in a Van Halen shirt.
Oh, my God. And Van Halen, he didn't mind you wearing your shirt?
No, it didn't jinx the band or anything. I mean, just Eddie died, right?
Well, it's something like that. Right, come on. Andrew, thank you very much for coming on the show. Thanks for writing the article in conjunction with your colleague, John Riley. We've not met. I've known John for a little while because he's in London. I love Toronto. I know it's a bit chilly normally, but I understand you got a bit of snow there today.
Absolutely. Just adding on more and more to what we've been getting the last month or so.
I was out a lot with you.
Shoveling the driveway this morning.
Keeps you fit.
It does.
And we're always really interested and ask our guests, at least, what were you doing before you got involved in this? And sort of, you know, the article was really interesting, but what were you doing before you sort of came across the technology and sort of digital assets and crypto and things like that?
Well, so I used to work for a number of banks in the cybersecurity departments in various levels of leadership and things there. But if we go really far back, I actually used to be a hacker when I was a kid. Very typical, you know, in living in my parents' basement, stuck to a computer screen.
He's
12
typing
to 18 hours
sword.
A day.
Drop sword.
Yes, player of many massively multiplayer online games. And I taught myself how to hack, you know, kind of as a hobby. And then I realized that, you know, if I kept doing what I was doing, I was probably going to do something I shouldn't and be on the wrong end of Johnny Law. And instead, I found that, you know, my skills could be put to work to protect a few different banks from hackers breaking in.
Wow. So you didn't get an invite from North Korea to go and do some proper hacking, and you decided to, be one of the good guys then and actually sort of look after people.
Yes, I went down the good guy route.
The good guy route. Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. So, you know, getting into the article, I suppose I'm just burning to ask the question. And that is, you know, we hear all these stories. We hear all these reports. How big an issue is cyber and hacking from your experience? And what are the challenges that digital assets in their general format, so NFTs, crypto, digital securities, what are the added challenges that they pose compared to your traditional world of banks and bits and pieces, would you say?
That's a big question. But to start answering it, cybercrime is rampant everywhere. It is, you know, from a corporate perspective, from a government perspective, one of the top risks in every country for every type of company or government institution. So it is, you know, the number one, two, three kind of top risk. You know, maybe climate change is higher now, but it is an absolute priority for everybody to get right. But the challenge with that is you can't see it and touch it. You know, I can see climate change at work. You know, tornado touches down somewhere in the U.S. Midwest in a time when tornadoes aren't supposed to touch down, right? It's real. You can see it. You can touch it and feel it. You can't feel cybercrime nearly as much as those types of events.
Well, or you do when it's too late and you suddenly find your wallet's been emptied.
Exactly. And so, you know, one of the things we do at DynaRisk is we've got a tremendous database of about 30 billion pieces of leaked and stolen information that we've recovered over many years from monitoring cyber criminal activity. And when someone signs up for our service, or, you know, we work a lot with insurance companies and banks to provide our technology to their end customers. And what usually happens is person thinks to themselves, or small business thinks to themselves, you know, this will never happen to me. Oh, it's always the other guy getting hacked. Oh, it's, you know, my business will never be hacked. It'll always be somebody else. Yeah. And when someone registers for our service, the first thing we do is we check to see if we already have leaked and stolen data records on those individuals or businesses. And people are shocked to see, oh, well, actually, my password has already been stolen 7 times. And it really triggers this awakening in the person's mind where they go, oh my God, you know, this is affecting me right now. So it's very hard for people to understand cyber risk, especially for those who are, you know, not tech savvy, which is quite a lot of people. Yeah. But as soon as you can connect the problem with themselves or with their company, then you see the light switch turn on and they go, I've got to do something about this.
Right. And can you do something without sort of incurring huge costs and taking a huge amount of time to do it? Is it to use the word that the IT, can you patch people's systems initially to some extent? Obviously, you can't solve the whole issue, or is it just a fairly long, complicated, expensive process?
Well, it's like everything, and I'll get on to the, you know, the crypto sort of specific, digital asset specific kind of topics in a second, but generally speaking, it's an 80-20 type of challenge, right? If you do 80% of the things that you should do that are relatively simple, relatively cost-effective, you know, you're pretty good. There's no such thing as guaranteed security. You know, you can still get mugged on the street if you walk through the wrong neighborhood at night. But if you do those basic things, don't reuse passwords, update your software to the latest version, monitor to see if your data records have been put at risk on the internet, you know, you're doing that 80%. And that's what we should expect ourselves and the businesses that we work with to be able to do. More specifically on digital assets, though, you know, this is a fast-moving, unregulated space, lots of risk. And the companies that are operating as exchanges or, you know, minting new cryptocurrencies or creating new NFTs or, you know, creating these Web3 properties where you can, you know, go in and buy land and things like that, we have to remember that these are all very new things. You know, banks have been around refining security for 300 years, right? Mm-hmm. These crypto exchanges and these businesses are all very new, and they will inevitably have holes in them, holes that hackers will be able to exploit. And those holes will lead to theft of crypto, like we've seen on many, many, many occasions.
So DynaRisk seems to me, I'm sort of picturing here a you're obviously not a but you're trying to catch the Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kids. You're a bounty hunter almost then.
Not exactly. We work with mostly insurance companies and banks.
Yep.
And we do a lot of work in the cyber insurance space where, you know, if you're an individual, if you're a company and you get hit with a cyber attack, you know, you will engage our service to help remediate the issue, or ideally you use our software to prevent yourself from being hacked in the first place. So we would check out your digital footprint, see what vulnerabilities you might have, get you to fix those. And then ideally, you know, you don't get hacked. You don't have to claim on your insurance policy. You don't have to call up the bank or a, you know, a crypto provider or a crypto exchange and say, hey, I got hacked. You know, in this case, prevention, you know, 1 ounce of prevention, as the saying goes, is worth a pound of cure. So we're in the risk management business, trying to stop these things from happening to people, rather than trying to, you know, clean up the mess afterwards.
Okay, so I was really interested this week, Andrew, to see that the US Secret Service actually came out with a claim that cryptocurrency is not inherently criminal. And that is juxtaposed to the normal headlines you see online in hard print that, you know, Bitcoin, it's a scam, it's a Ponzi scheme. You know, anyone dealing in cryptocurrencies have to be doing something wrong. So it was interesting to see a sort of a US law enforcement agency saying, actually, no, it doesn't. It's like anything, you know, cash is not inherently for criminals. Although maybe the French think it is, because you can't actually go and buy anything in France with more than 2,000 euros because they're trying to stop you from using cash. And you've got the crazy situation now in China. Well, it's crazy from our point of view, but, you know, they have a different way of looking at things. And, you know, they actually now can track who you're spending money with, where, on what, and everything else like that. That doesn't mean that you're trying to hide anything, but it just means it can be tracked now by a government. And that's probably what we're going to see more and more with central bank digital currencies. But I'm interested, why would a criminal, and I just can't answer this, why would a criminal use a cryptocurrency when they could use good old fashioned holding, folding, iCash? Because a cryptocurrency leaves a digital footprint. So therefore, doesn't it enable, you know, someone like you and your colleagues with the tools that you've got to be able to track down that person when they've done something nefarious?
So I agree that crypto is not inherently, you know, a method of transacting purely criminal transactions, right?
Right.
Just like you said, with it, cash is cash. Cash isn't evil. Cryptocurrency lends itself very well to suspicious or potentially fraudulent activity, because you can route it digitally through a number of various means. So, you know, you can take a payment in Bitcoin, you can sell that and trade it for Shibu Inu coins or something, and then, you know, exchange that and trade it for something else. And then, you know, you can make your footprint very difficult to track with changing of assets and routing it through a number of different systems and platforms and countries, et cetera. So it lends itself very well, because it is a digital currency, to new and different ways of laundering that money. Now, a number of cyber criminals ask for payment in Bitcoin. But, you know, we're also seeing a lot of banks introduce services for, you know, these crypto exchanges to have a treasury where the bank will hold crypto on behalf of some of these large corporate clients. And we're seeing stable coins come out. We're seeing government-backed, you know, digital dollars or what have you in different jurisdictions coming out. So crypto is definitely here to stay. It's a legitimate asset.
Yep.
It happens to be a very volatile one, and one which is not regulated. And that just means that, you know, we've got a lot of growing pains to get through before it becomes a mainstream asset like cash.
Yeah. Okay. But on the cyber side, there's added challenges though of holding in digital assets, clearly, because if you want to nick my cash, then you've got to actually sort of, you know, it's a bit like the old fashioned days. You've got to have a hold up. You've got to, you know, here in the UK, we had the highwaymen, that they would stop the carriages, you know, along the tracks, and they'd say, your money or your life. You know, we've seen enough Wild West movies, and we saw what went on in the early day, pioneering days in the States. But it's not quite so obvious though, is it, with digital? Because if I've given access someone to my password somehow, or someone perhaps oversaw me putting in a password, or maybe they turned on my webcam, or they've maybe put in an email that I've opened, and then there's some like Trojan horse and it's just going through all my data, and then suddenly ping, it can just take the relevant information and then open up my asset or pretend to be me and actually go to a friend and ask for information and then actually raid their wallet. So it's a different set of challenges, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's a lot of different risks here. And, you know, you've got to take action commensurate to that level of risk. So if you've just got, you know, 0.001% of the Bitcoin, you're just playing around, you got, you know, $500 of crypto, you know, you might not want to bother with doing a lot of things to take steps to really seriously protect your footprint. But, you know, if you've got a sizable holding in crypto or it's increased a lot over the last couple of years, then you should be taking a number of different precautions to protect that asset. Because like you said, someone can, you know, raid your house and steal the cash from under the floorboards. But today it would be, you know, let's go look for the user's password and username combination, try and log into an exchange, sell the holdings, and then transfer it out to a bank account, which is under the cyber criminal's control. And that's what we were seeing with this this break-in for crypto.com, where the hackers were able to bypass the two-step verification process, log into people's accounts with stolen username and password combinations, and then steal those funds from the exchange. And, you know, this is when we get back to the leaked and stolen data records that we have. Those data records that we find, those stolen username and password combinations, are the things that cyber criminals will use to break into people's crypto accounts. And so one challenge is, you know, you reuse the password for your crypto account on another site. That site gets hacked, and then the cyber criminal has that password.
Got it.
But then we also see, of course, cyber criminals targeting the exchanges themselves, or, you know, the brokers themselves, or even just knowing that you're interested in crypto and then sending you a phishing email and seeing if you reply, and then they send you a follow-up phishing email, which is a fake, and then, you know, tricks you into giving up your credentials to log in to one of these services. So if you know that you're being targeted, then you're going to do more things to protect yourself. You're going to turn on that two-step verification. You're going to make sure you use unique passwords, use a password manager, you know, take your crypto offline into cold storage. Don't store it on the exchange. Stick it in an encrypted wallet and store that offline. And what we're also seeing on the intelligence side is people will talk about their crypto holdings in public forums or social media, you know, on Reddit, on Twitter, whatever. There are some, you know, finance groups on sites like Reddit or Facebook, and someone will say, you know, hey, everybody, I've just gotten a huge gain in my crypto. You know, I invested 10K in Bitcoin 4 years ago, and now it's worth 300K. How do you think I should diversify? And the issue is there are hackers out there looking for these types of communications.
Yep.
They can then send you a message on one of these social media sites purporting to, you know, be trying to help you out with something or just engage in conversation. And then they know that you've got a big crypto account, and they're going to start sending you phishing emails under a different guise. You know, they're going to start to come after you. So we got to be very, very careful about what we say in a public forum, because those forums are monitored by people who are looking to steal that money from you.
So it's a bit like going to a football match, or sorry, soccer match, as James likes to call it. And, you know, I walk in there and I got my wallet with a couple of $1,000, and I go and try and buy a beer or some popcorn, and I'm flashing around, I've got loads of money. You just wouldn't do that. Well, A, people don't use cash anymore. B, even 5 years ago, you wouldn't do that because there's always someone around and they might think, oh, hang on, he's got a lot of cash. Maybe I could have a word with him and relieve him of some of that. So in the same way, just because you've got crypto and you're doing it online and from your office at home doesn't mean that you're safe. And perhaps, you know, a little bit more discretion, and you might find you're not going to see attract attention that you wouldn't necessarily want to, from what you're saying.
Absolutely. And, you know, the football match analogy, you know, you're standing in line buying a drink with a wallet full of cash. You know, how many people are going to see that? A dozen, let's say, people in right in your immediate vicinity. But if you're posting something like that on a forum or semi-public or a semi-public forum, there are essentially tens of thousands of people, quote unquote, watching, you know, seeing that you've got crypto, and then it only takes 0.1% of those people to have bad intentions, and then they can start coming after you.
This might sound a naive question, but do hackers sort of employ bots to look out for sort of certain combinations of words and numbers to try and pick up on those conversations? Is it almost being, are they sort of screening these sort of forums potentially?
So there are definitely bots patrolling these forums for all kinds of different purposes, legitimate, illegitimate, in a gray zone. So you've got to assume that there is a bot out there hoovering up your information. Whether it's a cyber criminal bot is another matter, but you should assume that anything you post on a forum like that is getting picked up.
Wow. James, I hope we haven't scared you too much. And I bet you, like I, you're going to take advantage of Andrew's very kind offer. And we've got a free link in this week's Digital Bytes, whereby your business or personally, you can do a quick check to see whether you've been breached or not. But have you got any thoughts before we wrap up this week's show, James?
Well, I was busy here cleaning my gun while listening to you. No, we
silver star.
Right. Yeah. I could tell you my experience, at least with our company. There's a lot of people out there to try to, Andrew pointed on it earlier, we have people that come in and go to my staff as my name. And they'll be like, you know, hey man, remember that Ethereum transaction we were going to do last week, but we didn't get to do it? It's all locked up. Could you loan me an ETH? And they think it's me, you know, and I always have to remind my team, listen, I'm never going to ask you for an ETH. That's just not going to happen. But we had one employee hand over like 2 ETH to some guy. I was like, why would you do that? He goes, well, I thought, you know, it was you. You said you needed it. I was like, I'm flattered, really, but no, God, no, I don't, no, don't do that. It's social engineering, I think, is a major proponent of cybersecurity today, as opposed to back in the 80s, where it was actually hacking with ones and zeros and you know, rainbow dictionary attacks. I think social engineering is really how we're getting people today.
Okay. Well, Andrew, thanks very much for coming on the show, and thanks for your article. And if anyone wants to get more information, you know, from yourself or from about Dynarisk, how's the, we spell, first of all, the you spell the name of the company Dynarisk. I assume that you've got clients all over the world. I know you've got offices in London and Toronto, but presumably you can help people literally almost anywhere in the world with your services.
Absolutely. You know, we've got clients and users all over the world, North America, Latin America, Europe, Asia, Middle East, consumers and small businesses alike. And like I said, we work with a lot of those large insurance companies and banks to provide our services to their end users and small businesses sort of in bulk, you know, for large segments of people. So we can help individuals or small companies directly, or work with those larger corporate partners to deliver the solutions to a wider net of people.
And presumably you've got a business model, which is almost, strikes me like almost a virtuous circle, because the more customers you have, the more hacks and nefarious actors you come across, so therefore the bigger your database, therefore the more people you can help, because you've already come across some of the people not doing things perhaps they ought to be. So, you know, we're kind of all helping each other by, you know, using a service like yours in a funny way.
Absolutely. Definitely strength in numbers. And the information that we gather helps everybody to stay on top of on the latest threats. And just in terms of, you know, how to get in touch with us, visit the website, of course, dynarisk.com, dynarisk.com. Ping us info@dynarisk.com. Look me up on LinkedIn. Lots of different ways to get in touch.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming on. James, that sort of brings this week's show to an end. A little bit scary, but, you know, you can't stick your head in the sand like the proverbial ostrich. You know, we all do have a responsibility to make sure we change our passwords, make sure we update the latest software, you know, all that sort of good stuff. So a useful reminder that there are things that we can do. We're not totally vulnerable, but, you know, we do have a degree of responsibility to make sure we're doing the right thing, James.
That's a great name, too. It's easy to... Do you ever come to these company names that are just ridiculously long? This guy, DynaRisk. It's easy.
There's nothing wrong with teamblockchain.net. Just a long word.
Teamblockchain.net with Johnny slash Johnny Fry slash JamesTiley.html.
Yeah.
I just say DynaRisk.
Yeah. The only thing is, though, is that in this country, if your drains are blocked, we have someone called DynaRod.
Like Roto-Rooter? We have a Roto-Rooter.
Like Roto-Rooter, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, DynaRisk, they solve a similar problem. You know, if you've got a blocked problem in terms of someone, you know, trying to hack into you, they're a great solution provider. So, yeah, great name. Okay, James, well, we'll be back on the air next week. Thanks again, Andrew. Really, really interesting. And be good to get you back again. And perhaps you can share some examples of where it's in the public domain of some different cases you've managed to track down and hopefully recover funds for people and sort of close some of the loopholes. So we'll try and get you back on the show later in the year.
Fabulous. Thanks very much, Johnny. James, it was great to be here.
Super. And thank you all for listening once again to the Digital Bite Show here on cyber.fm. And James and I will be back next week with a new guest and more updates of what's been happening in the sort of blockchain and digital asset sector. Thank you.